G'day, mate. How you going? This is Adam O'Brien, and welcome to Fandom Podcast Network, here where we enjoy all forms of fandom. Well, coming to you live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, I bring you Lethal Mullet Podcast, an Australian look at B-grade action films from the 1980s. That's right, going back to that beloved time when we had Chuck Norris on almost every Friday night here in Australia, kicking, punching, and shooting his way to the top, alongside Jean-Claude Van Damme, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and the likes of many of the others that came after him. Sylvester Stallone. We even look at some of the heroes you may not know, all here on one fortnightly podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can check it out also on Podbean if you've got the Podbean app. Make sure you check it out. Now, let's get into the episode here on Fandom Podcast Network. G'day, mate. How you going? Welcome back to Fandom Podcast Network's Lethal Mullet Podcast for 2019. Happy New Year and all that. I hope you enjoyed your holiday break. But we're going to be getting into some amazing celebrations of 80s action cinema. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien. And, of course, you can find me also on Fanthatrax Radio's The Fantha from Down Under, live from Quinlan's Cantina on the Gold Coast of Australia. But here, I am the Lethal Mullet, and I'm going to be going into some amazing John Carpenter chat today with my saga's co-host, the one, the only, Blair Hiscock, of also Pops Culture. So we're going to be chatting to him about his love of Big Trouble in Little China, They Live. We're also going to be looking at, of course, Escape from New York, and my personal favourite, The Thing. That's right. All right, before we get into the episode tonight, here's where you can catch this show and many others like it on Fandom Podcast Network. At fpnet.podbean.com, which is our main master feed. You also catch the actual show itself on the Podbean app. It's one of the greatest ways to check out the show. Also, if you like all the shows, you can catch them at all these different places where you can catch podcasts on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, and of course, Google Play if you're an Android user. Now, also on social media channels, you can find us on Twitter at FanPodNetwork and on Facebook, you can catch us at Fandom Podcast Network's page there at facebook.com/Fandom Podcast Network. If you want to catch us on the email lines, email any ideas you have that the show might be able to cover, any other films you think that have been fantastic, you can catch us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. You can catch me, the host, Adam O'Brien, at obpopculture on Twitter and, of course, on Instagram as well, same handle. And don't forget to catch me on my other show, The Fantha from Down Under, a fortnightly look at Star Wars from Down Under on Fanthatrax Radio or fanthatrax.com. And also check out the great shows that I'm doing here on Fandom Podcast Network's Couch Potato Theatre, where we look at Mad Max with Maximum Couch Potato, and also our brand new show, The Spicing Guild, looking at the adaptations of Frank Herbert's Dune. Now, let's get into the show. Hi, how you going? This is the one, the only Lethal Mullet podcast on Fan Pod Network here to chat a little bit today to the one, the only co-host of My Saga and, of course, friend of the channel here, Blair Hiscock, about John Carpenter and, of course, the 1980s flicks that we remember him for. Blair, how you going, mate?
John Carpenter, yay, one of my favourite directors of the 80s. It's pretty exciting to be here to chat about such an influential artist.
Oh, 100%.
How are you, by the way, Adam? Sorry.
Doing great, mate. Doing absolutely great.
Just excited to be on the show.
Mate, happy New Year. How are you?
Happy New Year to you. Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Yeah, so far so good. We're 8 days in, I can't believe, or 9 days in. I can't believe we're already 9 days in. Oh, Christmas will be here, but again before we know it.
Oh, 100%. And we've got to say that, you know, of all the directors to pick to do two episodes special, John Carpenter is just one of those great ones. You know, you've got the Escape from series with, of course, Escape from New York,
and the one we won't talk about, the sequel. We've got The Thing, yep. They Live, and of course Big Trouble. I think four of the quintessentials, not even counting his work in horror films, just quintessential.
Oh no, the man he just churned them out, and so many classics. I mean, the whole decade was just almost his decade film wise, especially in pop culture. It's just amazing.
Really is. One of the things I found in, you know, looking back on the films that he did and growing up as a filmmaker through his, you know, different projects he's worked on, different people he's worked with, is that, you know, there's a real music to him. You know, I think him being a musician too has, I think, made him one of the more rock and roll directors.
I was going to say that, because he did, I think all of his movies he does his music for, doesn't he? He does music for his films. And, I don't know, he just never lost, for whatever the budget that he got in, he never lost that, that cowboy type sort of filmmaking mentality. He put together, you know, stuff. That B-grade amateur type sort of vibe. Even though his films were out there and professional, they still had a real get together with your mates and let's make a movie sort of feel about them.
Oh, right up to even John Carpenter's Vampires. You know, I thought even that was a great flick it for what it is too. And I think interesting, you know, we've got I think here's Robert De Niro, if you like, and that is of course Kurt Russell.
Yeah,
you can't have him without a Kurt Russell in his big films. But let's look at the films that you've enjoyed in his 1980s run. Let's look at first of all, They Live. Did you enjoy that film?
Look, They Live is probably one of my favourite guilty pleasure movies that came out. It's just so out there, and it just speaks so much even today to society and it just had some great twists and some amazing one-liners that are just so quotable. And let's face it, probably the longest fist fight in cinema history. I think it goes nearly 20 minutes. It's just insane.
Sunglasses. No
less. Yeah, over some sunglasses, yeah. But, I mean, it was a film, in a way, like The Matrix, that sort of blew my mind when I first saw it, and I remember seeing it, you know, as one of those movies I got out from the local video shop back in the day, and I watched it about three times over the week that I had it, and just the concept was just incredible, and I always had that idea too, you know, what if this life isn't what we think it is, you know, and the whole idea of you know, putting on a pair of glasses and seeing the world for what it is was just really, really attractive to me. I think it's just a great, guilty pleasure movie, for sure.
I can't half tell that you know, the choice of Rowdy Roddy Piper was, you know, was a stroke of genius. I mean, he really, again, out of all the wrestlers, there's something earnest, true, and just fair dinkum about how he portrays himself as a wrestler, that character of the wrestler that he was, but also in this one, you know, he plays the role in this film so honestly. I think, that's the only thing. I mean, he's not, a natural actor, but the work that he did was so honest. Him working alongside Keith David and Meg Foster and the rest of the cast in this film was just brilliant.
Yeah, I actually didn't realise he was a wrestler until after I saw this movie, and I thought, oh, who's this guy, you know, and I actually didn't, you know, because I didn't know he was a wrestler, I thought he wasn't too bad in the play. You know, if he was a wrestler, I'd have been looking at him in a lot more of a critical eye, saying, the wrestler being an actor, but I just took him as the character, and when I saw it, and I thought he did a really good job, actually, in the part, but it's just one of those movies that should never be remade. You know, I really hope that they never remake it. It's one of those films that just, you know, stands the test of time for sure.
The rumour that's going right now is that John Carpenter is actually interesting, sort of different sequels that have been going around. One of those ones was a Big Trouble one, but a They Live sequel is actually mooted.
Okay. The thing is, because the film was such a surprise, you know, with the scenario, I don't know if it'd be able to recapture that in a sequel. Obviously, we don't have Roddy Piper anymore. He's not around, so he can't be the main star. Guess what? He didn't make it at the end of the movie anyway. And that's the other thing I liked about the film, was that, spoiler alert,
sorry, it's been 30 years.
Yeah, it's only been 30 years if you haven't seen it. But yeah, so I really like. I think I liked about the film too is I think it's the first movie that I saw where the heroes didn't, you know, come out smelling like roses and save the day and walk off into the sunset, and which was a bit of an, you know, an eye opener for me at the time. But absolutely love the film.
Oh, definitely. Let's talk about his amazing comedic work as a director, because I think it's not only an action film, it's a master stroke of good old fashioned comedy and action and adventure, and that is of course Jack Burton's adventure in Big Trouble Little China.
I thought you were going to say Escape from New York. That cracks me up every time I watch it. You're the Duke. Jack Burton. There again, another movie. I remember seeing it at the cinema. I actually went to the movies back in the day. I remember back in the mid '80s, I had a whole group of mates, and we always used to go into the films on a Friday night. You know, it'd be going into the city, going to Burger King or Hungry Jack's, whatever you want to call it, playing some video games, and then going to see a movie. And that was one of those perfect nights out. Seeing Big Trouble in Little China, because we did not know what to expect, and we just laughed and laughed. I loved Kurt Russell's, you know, character in that. And there again, another film with some amazing one-liners in it, and the action was just insane. I mean, you know, I didn't realize at the time, you know, it was such a tribute to, you know, the Chinese 70s movies and 60s and 70s movies that were coming out at the time. But it was just out there, and you know, it's another film that I can still watch now and still get a lot of pleasure and a lot of enjoyment out of, you know. And I still think the girl that they went to rescue, Mao Ying with the green eyes, I still think she's absolutely stunning. to this day, I think she's an absolutely stunning girl. And Kim Cattrall, that's right. Yeah, I remember seeing her in that, and she was only really young too, wasn't she?
She was.
I loved his truck. I loved the whole idea of the, you know, cruising around in the Pork Chop Express, I just was really disappointed because I could have seen a sequel to that. I'm sure, like you said, he's talking about it, but I would love to have seen a sequel to it, maybe like about 5 years after the first one came out, back in the early 90s. But there again, it was another movie, a genre that was established in the first film, which was a surprise and entertaining. So, yeah, to move it into a different direction would be great. Had some brand model work in that film too, and the makeup, some of the makeup was just sensational.
And what about James Hong? James Hong really stole that movie.
He did, yeah, he did. And his most memorable parts for me were that one and Wayne's World 2, when he was the father of the girl and took on Wayne in the martial arts fight. But
he's truly, truly wondrous. I think his role in Blade Runner will always be one, I think. You know, the fact that he really was cold in those scenes, and the gas that was being leaked into the fridge freezer at that Coalworks was really making them not well, you know, at the end of the day. Having said that, you know, that Jack Burton's one of those characters we could have seen Indiana Jones-like adventures of down the line.
Well,
know,
exactly, and I'd love to have seen a trilogy of Jack doing that thing, and it would have been great because Kirk could have had a franchise. I mean, sure, the Escape movies, I suppose it's a franchise, there's two films in it, he could have had an Indiana Jones franchise out of it. That would have been, great.
I think I've always thought of Jack Burton as the more mainstream friendly character that Kurt's done over the years. There's three big ones, I think. You know, Elvis. He's done Elvis. a couple of times with 3,000 miles to Graceland. but one of the interesting things is, you know, of all the characters to pick, one that's probably a little too Dirty Harry in a way, you know, a little too soft-spoken. It really is Clint Eastwood. But I think he's John Wayne-like in Jack Burton, but a John Wayne that can't do nothing. Is clever. I think he's always been clever.
Well, I mean, he's got that thing of, you know, big mouth, you know, I'm the cool guy, I know what I'm doing. He doesn't know what he's doing, and he lugs his way out of everything, you know, and that's so endearing. You know, a character like that is so endearing. I mean, Indiana Jones is like that a little bit. You know, he's a little bit more knowledgeable about things and a little bit more serious, I think, Indy. But he's got that, Jack had that similar sort of luck that Indiana Jones has, you know, wrong place at the wrong time, but... You know, just works his way out of things, and it was just a huge load of fun. You know, just a huge load of fun. So, do you feel like going to watch it now? Actually,
of course, we've got to say the escape films are two that. Well, the first one is the most beloved of them, of course. Oh. But you know, Snake Plissken, interesting character. The world of it's kind of a little bit, I suppose, like a washed up New York style of Mad Max.
True. Call me Snake. Yeah. There again, Escape from New York was another VHS discovery for me. I don't think... I remember seeing it in Starlog magazine when it came out, talking about it, thinking, I'm going to really have to see that when it gets there. And I think when it came out here at the cinema, I think it was on for about a fortnight. So I actually didn't get there, but I remember getting it out of the video shop. And there again, another movie that I must have watched multiple times over the time that I had it, because I love everything about it. It's like the Mad Max film. It's an awesome piece of world building. Really, really good piece of world building. And the best world building movies for me is that, you know, you believe totally that it's not just in the frame that the world exists. That outside that frame, that world exists as well. And the way that they do it is very clever. I wasn't too enamoured with Donald Pleasence as the president. You know, I thought they could have cast a better president.
And that accent, it's so shocking. Yeah,
yeah, I'm not amazing. I was expected him to...
The president of the United States. It's all over the place.
Just the whole thing. And, you know, I loved how they used the World Trade Center at the time, and in the far off world of 1997.
What was another famous one? Was it Predator 2 that was in 1997?
Yeah, it was. And they actually had a train, that's right, a subway in LA, which they still never have. But it was like, 7 years from now, this could happen. You know? And that's what I thought was great about Predator 2 in that regard too. I mean, it came out in 1990, but the 7 years, you could see, I could see that maybe happening in 7 years' time, the way things were, not just with the train, but just with how LA was, you know, in itself. Yeah, same thing with Demolition Man, you know, in the far-off world of 1996 or whatever it was, you know, when the whole world went to dirt. But, anyway, that's one of these future movies that we... that's just what you have to deal with, I suppose. But Escape from New York, I love Kurt in that. I love his character, even though he's, you know, the tough Clint Eastwood type sort of, you know, man with no name vibe. And I love Lee Van Cleef.
Oh, yeah, he's great
as well. You know, I love their intertwine. I love the play off each other. I love their dialogue that they have. I love when he goes, "The golf fire's waiting." You know, I just love that every time I see it. But, and it's just so, the characters, you know, inside New York are just so believable. Yeah, I mean, yeah, sure, they're all, you know, the punk, hippie type sort of Mad Max type sort of characters, but they're all interesting. Find them interesting. I love Ernest Borgnine as Cabby.
Cabby's great, isn't he? Cabby's fun.
What's his name? What's the girl's name? The main girl who was...
Job Carpenter's former wife. Yeah, it's his ex-wife. Yeah. She's fantastic, isn't it?
Barbara...
Barbara...
I can't remember.
Barbara Carpenter. Surely she didn't go by Barbara Carpenter.
Barbara Carpenter.
Barbara Carpenter.
But it's just had so many great characters in it. And, the Duke was terrific. The Duke, I loved
Isaac Hayes.
I loved Isaac Hayes, yeah. I loved his caddies with his, you know, the chandeliers on the front of them. I thought that was just so rock and roll, you know, at the time. But just the sets and everything as well, you just totally believe it. Like, you know, just sequences like when they drive the station wagon, you know, through all those people throwing rocks at the cars.
Yeah, and,
It was just so, realistic, I thought, at the time. And, I mean, it's a great movie. It's all shot at night, so they got away with a lot of not having to show too much because, you know, you get all these light and shadow. And that just adds to the movie as well. And there again, talking about Escape from L.A., it's a complete rehash of the first movie, really.
But you do get Bruce Campbell.
Yeah, true. But, there again, the whole scenario is exactly the same setup. And had a great end. I love the ending of the second one. I thought the ending is great.
Yeah, it's really operatic.
And that insane surfing sequence.
With Peter Fonda.
It's just mad. It's just it got a lot of in jokes in the movie as well. But Escape from New York to me now is still one of those movies, those apocalyptic films that I hold up there in probably the top 10 of my apocalyptic movies.
The biggest for me when it comes to a bit more serious, but it's still fun and interesting, and it's one of the most talked about science fiction films of the early 80s, 82. These great films come out, Blade Runner, E.T. obviously came out and was, blitzing it because of, obviously, it's got such a wider demographic than the others. But The Thing came out, and still to this day, people ask, was Kurt Russell The Thing at the end, or was it Keith David?
Look, 1982 was an incredible year for movies. It's probably the best. I can't think of really another year than 82 that we had just so much nostalgia and so much pop culture movies that even now are still classics. And The Thing was definitely up there in the top five for me of those movies. It's a movie that you just didn't know where it was going. It was just so mind-blowing, the makeup effects in that film. To this day, even now when I see it on television, my jaw drops. I'm just like, oh my gosh, and something that CG can never replicate.
Definitely.
And it made it so real and it just so tense. I mean, it's a movie that, it's like a screwdriver. It just gets twists and twists the whole way through it. That sequence, even though I've seen it a million times, that sequence when they test the blood, everybody's blood, still has me on edge every time I see that movie. I know how it's going to turn out, whatever, but still, it's one of those rare treat movies. And like I said, John Carpenter was at his peak for the 80s, and he could really do no wrong with the movies at the time. And it's funny because I actually found the original thing, the 50s thing, for one of my little cheap dollar store purchases, and I watched that, and it's just so, it's great for the nostalgia, but it's just so corny, the original thing. But to take that and take that premise and just turn it into this absolutely bent journey, it's just incredible.
Or even further with the supposed reboot, but really it's a prequel. And if you watch both the films back to back, it is fluid. It really is. I've done it with Macca once over here. We watched the prequel, then we watched the sequel, and especially in the closing credits of the prequel, you get to see the dog's journey or the wolf's journey.
I'll have to see that again. I've only seen the prequel once. Yeah.
And it just, it's well worth it because you get to see, again, the journey of, I suppose, the creature, but also you get to see the journey of, and to really think about the smart nature of the prequel itself, they've had to look at what Jock Carpenter put together especially for those scenes in The Thing where they're trying to, you know, deconstruct what happened to these guys, what happened to this, you know, other, you know, the Norwegians that were involved there, and to actually see that happen and see obviously an Australian actor and a couple others involved in it too, just, you know, brilliant. Of course, we're talking about Owen Lars.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Yep. He's great. I really enjoyed it. It really is great. And it opens with one hell of a joke as well in the snow.
Yeah, I'll have to watch it. I'm going to have to, source that one again. Cause seriously, I've only saw it the once, and I don't think I thought too much of it. Because, you know, obviously the first movie, the original one, you know, I must need to revisit it again. It's a little bit like, some of these movies, that, like the Alien films.
Yes.
Now, you know, you've got Prometheus and you've got Aliens. But yes, the sequel, Prometheus.
I still remember when you said that.
I still say that's what it should have been called, Prometheus.
Prometheus.
What Alien? You've got Aliens, one of Prometheus.
Prometheus anyway, Cube for the next one.
the next one. What was the second? See, I've even forgotten the one after Prometheus. Alien Covenant. Sorry. And, I mean, the thing is now, if you've never seen an Alien film, it ruins the first movie.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because you've got all this set up beforehand. And that's the problem I had with the prequel to The Thing was like, okay, if you've never seen The Thing and you see this movie first, then it's gonna dilute somewhat the original movie, you know. I'm a little bit against that kind of thing. But now you're talking about it again, that's one I really need to revisit.
Oh, definitely, definitely. So, you know, I think it's interesting for you listeners out there tonight too, have a bit of a look back at this first couple of runs of different films. They're all different. And I think straight through to the late 80s where he started working on films like, in the future, the Vampires. And then we had Vampires Los Muertos and Ghosts of Mars, which we could probably do without. But, all these other films.
I don't think I've ever seen that one.
Don't rush.
No.
No, don't rush. Jason Statham and Ice Cube.
I'm a big Statham fan, so I might have to check it out just for that reason alone.
Yeah, maybe. I just think that there's a lot more Carpenter could have done. I think, maybe, the low budgets at the time were probably not the low budgets that he was aiming for. But it's, again, the heyday of the 80s is still, to me, great, right up there. I think the most audience pleasing will always be Big Trouble in Little China, but
definitely for sure. You know what though? I mean, it's not the 80s, but I think my favourite John Carpenter movie of all time is Dark Star.
Oh yeah, beautiful film, beautiful.
That was just so surprising. I remember at the time, and you know, it's got a real student film type sort of vibe of it. But I think Dan O'Bannon's actually in the movie as one of the astronauts, and he's the guy who produced Alien a few years later, and it's got that similar sort of vibe to it. And another film with a fantastic ending that makes you think, you know. And I love the beach ball alien. I thought that was that was mad. But I like it. He just seemed to knock it out of the park from the start, and it was a great launching pad into other things. But I hold Dark Star in very high regard.
Definitely. So where can the listeners here at Phantom Podcast Network check you out?
Well, I'm on the My Saga podcast with Adam Harris, where we discuss Star Wars and all the events that go on in the saga on a hopefully a weekly basis, depending on the stories that come out. Some weeks there's a little bit, not too much to talk about, but we've got a big year planned this year, so that's on iTunes on My Saga. I'm myself, I am on Pops Culture on YouTube, which I haven't done a video for a little while, but that will be remedied very soon. And I'm also on the Fandom Podcast Network the odd show on there. So, check us out.
Awesome, awesome. I want to thank Blair for being on the show, and go and check those shows out, the links. Check out Pops Culture, and I hope you join us on Phantom Podcast Network's other shows to check out the amazing work that Blair's doing, mate. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
No worries. See you guys. Thank you.
The Phantom.
Lamp it up, Osborne.
from down under.
Do or do not. There is no try.
G'day, mate. How you going? Here's where you can find all the great shows on Fandom Podcast Network. You can go to podbean.com, where we are at fpnet.podbean.com. It's a great way to check out the show, or even download the Podbean app off iTunes or maybe Google Play. Fandom Podcast Network on social channels. You can also find it us on Twitter on the handle at FanPodNetwork. You can also catch us at Facebook on facebook.com/Fandom Podcast Network. You can show all the shows on your iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, or Google Play for Android users. If you'd like to contact us directly, you can find us at on email at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. You can catch me, the host of the show, here at obipopculture on both Twitter and Instagram. To get your own Fandom Podcast Network t-shirts and other apparel, please visit Fandom Podcast Network store on TeePublic. On iTunes, please leave us a review on iTunes so new fans can find us easier. We love 5-star reviews, of course, but we love general feedback. Please listen to our other podcasts on the Fandom Podcast Network master feed at fbnet.podbean.com. Check out Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast. You also catch Culture Clash, the weekly pop culture show. We also have Couch Potato Theatre, the guilty pleasure favourites. We also have Time Warp, the Fandom Flashback podcast. If you're into American football, why not check out The End Zone with Carl Wagner and, of course, Kevin the Raider Nerd Reitzel. We also have, if you're an Alfred Hitchcock fan, The Good Evening Show. If you're into Star Trek Discovery and, of course, The Orville, you can catch us at Discoville. Also, if you're into Poison, Guns N' Roses, and, as Kevin's brought up, LA Guns, check out the amazing hair metal podcast, which is hosted by Kevin himself. So go and check that out. Also, check out Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, all on the master feed on the Podbean page. Be sure to email in any movies you'd like us to check out here on the show. And, of course, make sure they're big red and make sure they're good. I'm Adam O'Brien. We'll catch you next fortnight on here at Fandom Podcast Network's Lethal Mullet. G'day, mate. How you going? I'll see you later.